Elective, Culinary Arts, Spain Immersion, Aiden. I was accepted into the class. The new boy, Malachi, stares out the window. I look back at the sheet. There's my name at the top. My other classes are the same. I try to keep my cool, even though I'm so excited my hands shake. Your report for your first day of elective starting today. Let me know after class if you have any problems. Now, take out the outline of your college essay. We still have 15 minutes and we'll use them to revise the themes of your essays. College essay, first draft. My father's name is Julio. And like the warm weather month he's named after, he comes to visit once a year. My grandmother says that my father couldn't handle being a single parent after my mother died. That before that, my mother kept him in check, but he'd had an itch under his skin to return to his island. My grandmother and grandfather moved when he was only 14, and they say he didn't adjust easily to the cold, the English, the way these streets were run so different from his own. My grandmother chose to raise me when my father settled me onto her lap, asking her to watch me for a while, and then left the hospital. A while became 17 years. It was in that exchange of my body from his hands to hers that the entire course of my life changed. People say that you're stuck with the family you're born into, and for most people, that's probably true, but we all make choices about people, who we want to hold close, who we want to remain in our lives, and who we are just fine without. I choose not to dwell on my father's rotating door style of parenting, and instead reflect on my grandmother's choice to not only bring me home from the hospital and raise me, but also to offer me a fighting chance. The world is a turntable that never stops spinning. As humans, we merely choose the tracks we want to sit out and the ones that inspire us to dance. An art form. I try to keep myself from weeping when I first walk into the commercial-style kitchen. I've only ever seen a professional kitchen on TV, and this one isn't nearly as updated, but it's still nicer than any kitchen I've ever been in. Against the far wall are two sets of double sinks and big metal cages full of mixing bowls, tongs, large wooden spoons, and serving utensils. Along the wall to my right are two full gas stoves and ovens. To my left, three massive fridges are framed by pantries that I assume hold dry ingredients. Pots and pans hang from the ceiling, hooked up like steel chandeliers. In the center of the room, five metal tables create a rectangle around a single table. I've never been to an opera, but this must be what it's like for a conductor to walk into an opera house, see the stage lit, and the curtains draw back and know that they were meant to make the walls echo with music. The instructor, I'm assuming Chef Aiden, since the chef's coat is buttoned neatly around the pudge of his stomach and he's wearing comfortable-looking checkered pants, walks out from his office in the back of the room just as Malachi rushes into class. For a second, they stare at each other as the rest of us look between them. Chef Aiden isn't a tall man, and has a kind of dark skin that's so free of blemishes it looks polished. Malachi walks to the only open spot next to Pretty Leslie, and for a second, I think Chef Aiden is going to kick him out for being late. This boy would be in this damn class with me, and I don't know why it annoys me so much. This is not just another class. This is an actual kitchen. We have real knives, we have real food, and we have a real clock ticking on the wall that measures everything we can accomplish during a class period. And, as some of you might have heard, we have a real trip to another country planned for the spring. If you can't handle showing up on time to this class, I'm definitely not taking you abroad. I am not here because I always dreamed of being a teacher. I'm here because I love to cook, because you all had an opening for culinary arts in your school, and because I know how to run a kitchen. Before this is a school classroom, it's a kitchen, and you all were respected as such. Understood? He stops speaking, and clearly he means for us to answer. Some of us mumble, some of us nod, I wish I was in the classroom alone and could inspect the knives and burners and spice pantry. He looks around the entire room, making eye contact with each of us before moving on. Cooking is about respect. Respect for the food. Respect for your space. Respect for your colleagues. And respect for your diners. The chef who ignores one of these is not a chef at all. If you have a problem with respect, this is not the class for you. Please let me know and I'll sign the form for you to drop. Chef Aiden looks around the room again, but nobody moves. His eyes land on me and I hold his gaze. First things first. By the end of this week, you'll have to fill out the loan form to borrow a chef's jacket and hat. When you walk into this room, you aren't Schomburg Charter students. You are kitchen staff in training. I have a feeling that this dude has a lot of lectures he wants to give, although I do like what he said about respect. Today, you aren't even going to touch food. He waves a butter knife in the air. Today, you learn how to hold a knife. I try to hold back a sigh that would rival any one of Angelica's, but it squeezes out of my chest anyway, and Chef Aiden's eyes zoom back my way. For a second, when Chef was talking, I thought he must know what it's like in the places we're from. He sure sounded like he understood what it's like being from the city. But this butter knife business lets me know he must be from somewhere else, because most of us in the room have probably been cooking and using knives our whole lives, not to mention we've seen them used on each other. Everyone else must feel the same way, because a couple of people shuffle their feet, and pretty Leslie clears her throat from across the room. Chef? I don't mean to be rude or whatever, but I thought this was a cooking class. I'm pretty sure most of us know how to hold a knife. See? Even pretty Leslie feels me, and that girl is as contrary as I don't know what. Cooking class? No. This is a culinary arts class, as in, this is about creativity and heart and science and art form. And no artist begins a masterpiece without understanding their tools and their medium. Anyone can teach you how to cook. You can Google that. If you want to learn how to make art, stay here. Pretty Leslie flips her hair and gives a small shrug, but she doesn't leave the classroom. Neither do I. Malachi. Hey, Santiago. A voice behind me calls. I look over my shoulder and see Malachi jogging up, narrowly avoiding bumping into a couple of football players. He doesn't even notice the way they grill him. Hey, Malachi, right? I say. You know you can just call me Imani, only Miss Fuentes does the last name thing. I make sure not to slow down or change my walk in any way. I don't want this boy thinking for a second he's got any reason to talk to me. Unfortunately, he has pretty long legs, and it doesn't take much for him to keep up with my short ones. I don't think I knew that was your first name. I like it. Isn't Imani one of the days you celebrate during Kwanzaa? I didn't think you were black. I can't help how hard my eyes roll. Here we go. And why, Malachi, did you not think I was black? Well, your last name is Santiago. You're light-skinned, and your hair is wild curly. I assumed you were Spanish, he says, pulling on a strand. I swat at his hand. Boy, don't touch me, I say. My father is Puerto Rican, and he's darker than my mom was, and her whole family is straight from the Carolinas black, and her hair was just as curly as mine. Not all black women and Latinas look the same. He throws his hands up in surrender mode. My bad. Didn't mean to offend you none. I just wanted to know where you're from since you don't seem regular black. I take a deep breath, because I know he didn't mean anything by his question. I get you. And yes, I'm black on both sides, although my Puerto Rican side speaks Spanish and my American side speaks English. I appreciate the race lesson. He's trying to charm me, and I'm not here for it. Did you need something? I ask, winding around a corner. Who made this boy think I had time for him? Got me out here wasting all my good words. But then he smiles, dimples popping out on both cheeks like billboards for joy, and I stumble over my own feet. Shit, that smile should come with a trigger warning, because blah, it's playing target practice with my emotions. It's even making me curse. And even though it's only in my head, I promised I would work on it. Now I'm really annoyed. Nah, Santiago, I just wanted to say hello. I'm glad we have this class together. I'd love to try your cooking. I narrow my eyes at him. Was that some weird sexual innuendo? His eyes widen, and he barks out a laugh. Dang, yo, I'm just trying to be nice. Get your mind out the gutter. Well, yeah, I guess tasting will be a part of the class. I stop in front of my English class. Angelica is sitting by the door, and I see her already taking down notes. This is me. And then because Buela didn't raise me to be rude, thanks for walking me to class. No problem, Santi. Black like me. I've lived my whole life having people question what race I am. Not necessarily the homies I grew up with. In Fairhill, we are mostly Spanish-speaking Caribbeans and Philly-raised Black Americans with roots in the South, which means, in my hood, everyone's parents or great-grandparents got some kind of accent that ain't a Philly one. But when people from a different neighborhood first meet me, they wonder why I don't fit certain molds. The Latina grandmothers at the papi store tisk-tisk when they ask me a question in Spanish and I answer with my chopped-up tongue, or worse, in English. And I don't have enough skills to tell them, well, I didn't raise me speaking much Spanish. I can understand a lot of it because of her, but English is the language I learned at school and watched on TV, and for the most part, even the one we speak at home. I try not to be self-conscious about how little Spanish I know, but some days it feels like not speaking Spanish automatically makes me a bad Boricua, one who's forgotten her roots. But on the flip side, folks wonder if I'm Black American enough, as if my Puerto Rican side cancels out any blackness, although if we only go according to skin, my Puerto Rican side is as Black as my Black American side. Not to mention, Julio may be a lot of things, but he sure is proud of his African roots, and he's made sure I never forget our history. And Buela doesn't shy away from her blackness either, even if she's quieter with how she talks about it. I don't know how many times someone has asked Buela for directions in the street, and the moment they hear her accent, a surprise, "Oh, you Spanish?" slips out of their mouths. I'm constantly having to give people geography and history lessons on how my grandmother's hometown is 65% Afro-Puerto Rican, on how the majority of slaves were dropped off in the Caribbean and Latin America, on how just because our Black comes with bomba and mofongo doesn't mean it isn't valid. And it seems I'm always defending the parts of me that I've inherited from my mother, the roots that come from this country, the facts that Aunt Sarah tells me about our people in the Raleigh area, the little sayings she slips into her emails that I know come from her mother, and her mother's mother, and her mother's mother's mother, to the first African mother who touched foot on this here land. The same wisdom I whisper to baby girl every now and then, a reminder of where and who we are from. This stuff is complicated. But it's like I'm some long division problem folks keep wanting to parcel into pieces, and they don't hear me when I say, I don't reduce, homies. The whole of me is Black. The whole of me is whole. The Reed. Who was that you were talking to? Angelica pops a big wad of red gum into her mouth as the bell rings after English, and everyone hustles down the hallway to their lockers. Who? I ask, stealing a stick of gum before she can drop the pack back in her purse. Don't play dumb with me, Imani, she says, poking me in the rib. You don't talk to any of the guys at school, and I definitely saw one fine-ass dude walk you to class. He knew? Caught. Oh, we have advisory together and the culinary arts class. Malachi. Transferred from somewhere in Newark or something. Newark? Oh, he a brave soul bringing his ass over here. A very cute brave soul. So how did that class go? You seemed nervous when I saw you at lunch. Angelica is looking at me, oblivious to the mob of lost-looking freshmen coming her way. I pull her to me so she doesn't get bumped. It was okay. We talked about butter knives. Did you talk about tools in your art class? Angelica gives me a puzzled look before stopping in front of our locker. She turns the dial and opens up her top half. Tools? We went over the different design programs we'll be using. We won't start actual projects for a week or two while we learn the systems. Huh. Maybe Chef was right. It's a different kind of tool, but sounds like Angelica wasn't just jumping right into design either. Tell me more about this Malachi person. She pulls her books out. Jelly, please. And move your big old behind. I bump lightly against her and open my bottom locker, put a textbook back, and then shut it. I'm just saying, he would be a cute prom date, she says, popping her gum right in my face. And I'm just saying, I say, walking toward the school exit, that unless they let in two-year-olds or middle-aged women, I don't plan on going to prom at all. Salty. Welcome to the Burger John. What can I get for you, ma'am? Well, let's see. What burger do you recommend? My manager, Steve, walks over, stands right on my shoulder, and immediately begins running his mouth. All the burgers are delicious here, ma'am. You might want to try the joint special. It comes with extra bacon and cheese. I think I should get points for the fact that I keep my face stoic. Steve is always trying to warm up to customers and jumping all in a cashier's space. I can feel his hot breath on my neck, and it takes everything in me not to shoot him the dirtiest look. Thing one, that frozen slice of mess infused with caramel coloring is not bacon. Thing two, I don't know why anyone would want cardboard-flavored fake news cheese calories on their sandwich. Thing three, if he wants to do my job for me, why did he hire me at all? The woman nods along, then looks me straight in the eye. She seems like a professor. Her glasses sit low on her nose, and she has the kind of presence that makes me think she's used to commanding attention in a lecture hall. And you, young lady? What's your preference? Her no BS gaze never leaves my face. I turn my lips into what I hope is a believable smile. The vanilla milkshake is good. It's made with real ice cream. And the number 6 is, popular? I wasn't made for BS. She nods again. Thanks, honey. Not sure I'm craving a burger after all. She walks out and a guy I know from school walks in. We aren't too far from Schaumburg, so I'm not surprised to see someone I recognize. I take his order, and when I turn around to grab his fries, I bump straight into Steve. Sorry, I mumble, but he follows me into the prep area. Why didn't you back me up there, Imani? We just lost money with that last customer. I just wanted to give her choices, Steve. I scoop some fries into a carton. The salt crystals gleam on them like some rapper's diamond-crusted chain. Steve doesn't let it go. You sabotaged the sale. You didn't even answer her question. I give him a small shrug and what I hope is an apologetic smile. I load a tray with the fries and an apple pie and walk over to the shake machine. Steve shuffles along with me. What is your favorite sandwich, Imani? Uh-oh. Girl, I do not eat the burgers here. I struggle to eat anything I can make 100% better in my own kitchen. But I need this job, so I quickly swallow and say, I mean, everyone likes the number 6, right? Steve narrows his eyes. Imani, I'm really going to need you to figure out how to be a team player, or maybe this isn't the team for you. And with that, Steve huffs off to his office, his attitude as dry and stale as his fries. Tantrums and terrible twos. Have a carrot, said the mother bunny. The end. I close the picture book and kiss the top of baby girl's head. She's snuggled against me with her thumb in her mouth. Baby girl, I told you to stop sucking on your thumb. It's a bad habit, I say, taking her hand in my own to get it away from her lips. She waits a second after I let go before sticking her thumb right back where it'd been. Read again, Mommy, she speaks around the finger I gently pull from her mouth. Not tonight, babes. It's time for bed. Mommy has to do homework. I don't know what hit these teachers over the weekend, but every single one of my classes gave an hour's worth of homework today, and I know I have a long night ahead of me. I swing baby girl's legs around my waist and walk up the stairs to our room. I want read again, she screeches. and I know she's going to interrupt the Eagles game Buela is watching. It's the first week of season games, and Buela gets grumpy if she can't watch her team. Emma Santiago, I say, using her government name because it's the only way to get ahead of her tantrums. Yelling won't work. I know you want me to read it again, but we've already read it 3 times, and you have to learn you can't always get what you want. Some days, I'm convinced baby girl has an old soul, the kind of spirit that makes me imagine she was meditating and holding yoga poses in my belly. I'm less convinced of that these days, when she started spending more time away with her dad. I don't know if they are spoiling her over there or have jumbled up her whole routine, but it sure is an adjustment to get her back to the Santiago way of doing things after the weekends she spends away. So when she starts wailing, crying, and throwing her stuffed animals out of her crib, all I can do is sigh and count under my breath. You were the same way, you know. When you wanted something, you let the whole world know. I don't turn to Buela, who stands in the doorway. She doesn't enter the room. Buela lets me handle the tantrums by myself. At first, I used to get mad at her. What the hell did I know about making a baby stop yelling? But I've learned to appreciate her lack of intervention. She lets me be the mom. Baby girl, I say, walking up to the crib, we can read the story 4 times tomorrow. I love that you love reading, but right now, it's time to go to sleep. She responds by throwing a doll at me. That's enough, Emma, I say. I don't use my no-nonsense voice often, but I bring it out now. Just because you're angry doesn't mean you throw things at people. She curls up, still crying loudly but clearly exhausted. Her small body heaves with sobs, and everything inside me wants to run my hand down her little head and just read her the damn story again. Just give her what she wants to stop her from hurting. But I keep still until she quiets down, until her breathing turns heavy. Once she's asleep, I pick up the stuffed animals and place them neatly at her feet, then wipe the wetness off her cheeks. I turn her nightlight on and close the door to our room. 30 minutes wasted, and it's all the bunny's fault. Buela follows me downstairs into the living room, where I replace the runaway bunny with applied mathematics, equations in the real world. I'm sorry we interrupted the game, I say, and sit on the couch. It was halftime, Nena, and we are looking terrible. I sure hope my boys can get it together soon. She sits down next to me and removes a book from my hands. I sigh and put my head on her shoulder. She pats my face, and I snuggle more deeply into her side. You want me to read to you? I don't think the applied mathematics textbook will allow you to practice your character voices, I say, closing my eyes. She shifts a bit, and I hear her pick up the book. Once, there was a little bunny who wanted to run away. Fickle fatherhood. My father has always loved to read to me. I may question a lot of his actions, but his phone calls from San Juan and his attempts to instill a love of knowledge into me aren't among them. Even my earliest memories include his voice in my ear, reading a passage from whatever book he was currently into. Julio didn't believe in children's books. He believed whatever he read, he should read to me. Always nonfiction and rarely fit for a child, but I loved listening to his voice. These days, he doesn't read to me when he comes to visit, and he visits at the same time every year. Julio arrives at the beginning of July, usually with a full agenda. This past summer, he rented a chair at the barbershop down the block and cut a couple of heads in the morning, volunteered at the cultural center in the afternoon, and attended summer lectures and readings at whichever one of the universities in the city was having an event. Every day he invited me to come with him on his afternoon adventures, but I'm not one for lectures, and my relationship with my father is complicated. Not to mention, my new job didn't allow me to just drop work whenever he asked. In the evenings, he was the perfect house guest. He helped wash the dishes even though he was always too late to eat dinner with us. He picked up Buela's medicine at the pharmacy or anything we needed from the grocery store. He played with baby girl and pretended he was going to buzz cut her hair until she squealed with laughter and batted at his clippers. He was one of the few people who could stop her from crying when she was throwing a tantrum. I had a glimpse into the kind of father he might have been if my mother had lived. if he had chosen to stay. But Julio never stays long, and he never gives notice. At some point, when August starts rearing its head, Julio begins rearing his toward a flight back to Puerto Rico. At the end of July this year, when Buela and I got home from the supermarket, all his stuff was gone from the living room. His suitcase wasn't in the corner. His blanket was neatly folded over the couch. The case with his barbering tools was nowhere to be seen. Baby girl was at Tyrone's house that weekend, so not only did he not say goodbye to us, he didn't even say goodbye to her. And by that point, she'd gotten attached to Pop Pop, as she called him. But poof, Houdini in the flesh, or rather, in the disappearance. He didn't leave a note. He didn't text goodbye. He called a week later like nothing had happened and asked if I could send him Angelica's Netflix password so he could watch a documentary on the Young Lords. And maybe, because I struggled to learn certain lessons, this one has taken me years and years to learn. You can't make too much space for a father like mine in your life, because he'll elbow his way in and stretch the corners wide, and when he leaves, all you have is the oversized empty, the gap in your heart where a parent should be. Exhaustion. Sansi, you're really quiet in advisory today, Malachi says. I don't know when he decided he had a right to nickname me, but I'm too tired to correct him. It's only the middle of the second week, and although we see each other in class, we haven't spoken much. Yeah, I was up late doing work, and Miss Fuentes gave me a crap load of edits on the college essay draft. He raises a questioning eyebrow at my curse correction, but drops it. What are you writing yours on? He asks. I cut around the corner on my way to my next class. We don't have call arts until later in the day, Malachi. Where are you going? Just walking you to class, Santi. I stutter to a stop near a water fountain. Malachi, we aren't friends. We can be friendly, but I don't want you to get it twisted. I know you're new and I'm not trying to be mean, but I just want to be clear. We, you and me, aren't friends. I wouldn't always have been able to say that to someone. I was so quiet and shy and surprised to get any attention at all. But the toddler books all suggest moms practice direct and clear language, managing expectations, giving explicit instructions, etc. Sometimes I think boys are just like babies when it comes to something they want, and they need to be told no, firmly and without qualification. Malachi reaches up and pulls on one of my curls. Okay, Santi, we aren't friends. Can I walk in the same direction as you until you get to your class? Won't you be late for yours? He shrugs. We, you and me, aren't friends. So don't you even worry about my attendance record, Santi. He flashes his smile, and at the sight of his dimples, I almost melt. Plus, you are one of the few kids I've had actual conversations with. Why don't you tell me some things I should make sure to see in the city? And although I don't want to encourage Malachi more than necessary, I'm always looking for a reason to big up my city. Well, let's start with cheesesteaks. The spot all the tourists go to, Basura. The best cheesesteaks. A Tale of Two Cities. I come from a place in Philadelphia that reminds me of a Charles Dickens book we read in English, The Tale of Two Cities one, that's set in Paris and London during and after the French Revolution. But the place I come from ain't nowhere close to Europe. I'm from Fairhill. It sounds pretty, don't it? And for a lot of outsiders, the name is the only pretty thing about it. Most folks are Puerto Rican. Julio tells me this neighborhood has the highest rate of Puerto Ricans outside of the island. I don't know why, though. It doesn't look anything like pictures of the island I've seen. Blocks and blocks of two-story row houses, concrete, fenced-in yards, and vacant lots. People have had a lot to say about our neck of the woods. But in general, they should probably keep their neck out our business. This part of North Philly has one of the highest crime rates in the city, or at least that's what the newspaper reports. They call us part of the Badlands, but But when you stay here, you know there's a lot more goodness than is reported in the news. Sure, we have gang fights that happen to the soundtrack of gunshots, but we also have dance crews that perform at the summer block parties. We have El Centro de Oro, the strip of Puerto Rican shops where you can get everything from oversized flags to island spices to hand-carved mortar and pestles. We have corner store owners who hand out candy during Halloween, and the barbershop on the block that keeps a cooler of cold water out front in the summer. We got the rec center, where most of us grew up doing our homework, where I received teen parenting classes and counseling while pregnant. And we got the cultural center a few blocks over that has art workshops, free English lessons, and even brings in live bands for concerts. Maybe it's more than just a tale of two cities. It's a tale of two neighborhoods. On the one hand, people are scared to come over here because they say this part of town is dangerous, undeveloped. And a part of me thinks, good, keep out then. But everyone knows that the good things like farmers markets and updated grocery stores and consistent trash pickup only happen when outsiders move in. And as much as it seems our neighborhood is forgotten, change is coming. I've been seeing more and more construction sites and lots of houses with sold signs. And more than ever before, white people have been getting off at my train stop, eating at Freddie and Tony's, wearing their fancy college sweaters, and looking like they are nervously making their way home. Home. I come from a place that's as sweet as the freshest berry, as sour as curdled milk, where we dream of owning mansions and leaving the hood, where we couldn't imagine having been raised anywhere else. People wonder why I walk so hard, why I smile so rarely at strangers, why I mean mug and carry grit like loose change in my pocket. And everyone in Philadelphia reps their hood just like me. One of the first things you ask and learn about someone is where they stay. Where we come from leaves its fingerprints all over us. And if you know how to read the signs of a place, you know a little bit more who someone is. And me, I'm pure Fairhill. But I also got more than one city, one hood inside me. And anyone who wants to get to know me has to know how to appreciate the multiple skylines. Fail. Under what conditions do pathogens that contaminate food grow? Chef Aiden scans the room. Sharif? Sharif looks down at his station as if the answer is written in magical ink. He shrugs. Chef Aiden makes a note on his clipboard. Today we were surprised with a verbal pop quiz. In addition to studying the components of a recipe, learning to plate, and learning to serve, Chef Aiden also wants us to prepare for the serve-safe test. He rarely quizzes us like other teachers, with a written-down test. Instead, he asks questions out loud, and you have to be quick on your feet. He says being able to respond quickly and efficiently is how it will be in a real kitchen. And although we hate the quizzes, we all want to pass the serve-safe test. If we pass that test, not only do we pass the class, we are also given a certificate by the city that proves we know how to safely handle food and can work at a restaurant. Technically, with that certificate, I could apply to take over Steve's job at the Burger John. I don't want Steve's job, but I like knowing I have the credentials to take it from him if I wanted to. Imani? I stopped tucking away the ends of my headscarf. Chef said I could wear this instead of a hat as long as it keeps my hair out of my face and my pots. My curls were not fitting under that hat. Yes, Chef Aiden? At what temperature is chicken considered time temperature abused? My eyebrows shoot up. I hadn't paid attention to the temperature portion of the study guide. Chicken is done when it's done. Imani? I close my eyes. When you cut the chicken, you want the inside to show only the slightest hint of whitish pink, since the chicken will keep, he makes a note on his clipboard. Imani, what pieces of information need to be on the label of food you plan to store in the freezer? The expiration date. I mean, the date the food was prepared. And the time the food was prepared. The name of the food? I look at the spot right over Chef's shoulder. I can't meet his eyes. He makes another note on his clipboard. You're not wrong, but you're also not technically right. You have a sense of what works. You understand it in practice, but you still need to learn the technicalities. Cooking is a science. It's more than just instinct. Although I want to drop my head, I keep my chin up. This is exactly what I was afraid of, that this class would be more about what I could memorize than what I could do. Most of us signed up for this class to travel and cook, and we haven't discussed either. Chef Aiden seems to be waiting for me to say something, but I just stare at him silently. He shakes his head. Leslie, talk to me about storing food. Where is the safest place to store dry goods? And when the attention swings to pretty Leslie, I finally drop my gaze. Shame, like the bacteria Chef Aiden asked about, spreading under my skin. Catharsis. Buela comes into the kitchen and turns on the radio. The sound of Mark Anthony wailing alongside an orchestra fills the kitchen. I would wrap my soul in a bow and sell it with the quickness to be able to cook for Mark Anthony. That man can sing. Buela pulls out the herbs that she gets directly from El Campo in Puerto Rico and sets them on the counter. The sweet-smelling hierbabuena, the Caribbean oregano. She hands me the knives before I ask for them, cleans the cutting board before I realize I need it rinsed. Some days, when my feelings are like this, like a full pot of water with the fire on high, I don't know what to cook. Plans and ideas escape my mind, and instead I let my heart and hands take control, guided by a voice on the inside that tells me what goes where. I push aside, or maybe I push forward, all the things I feel. Angry that I have to give baby girl away every other weekend, that I have to dress her like a doll for her grandmother to love her. Conflicted about this damn elective that I convinced myself to take and that has now become my toughest class. Upset I have a greasy-ass job serving some cookie-cutter food where I get in trouble for the smallest mistakes. Confused about a father I love, but also miss. Nervous that it's senior year, and I don't know if college is in the plans for me, and I don't know what is in the plans, if not that. My hands move on their own, grabbing and slicing and mincing, and Buela and I are making music alongside the radio, the clanging of pans, the mortar against the pestle, our voices humming. When all the sounds stop, including the radio, it's like I'm walking out of a fog. The stove is turned off. Buela wipes down the counter and folds the dish rag before turning to me. I lift the pot lids and see that I've made a fragrant yellow rice with cilantro. Somehow, black-eyed peas found their ways into the rice, but I can tell from the smell that it works. The chicken looks juicy and smothered in onions. It's cooked perfectly without a thermometer. The green salad with the spinach base is crisp. Not a complicated meal, but one made for comfort. I plate Buela's portion using one of the lessons I learned from the Call Arts textbook. The starch on the bottom and the protein on top, sauce spooned over both, a separate bowl for the salad. After the first bite, she closes her eyes, and when she opens them, she is in tears. She laughs when she wipes her eyes. Look at me crying, like this doesn't happen every time, Nena. I don't often ask questions about how people react to the food I cook. It makes my belly squeeze tight to know my dishes might have an effect I don't mean them to have. Like something inside me left my body and entered into the pots and pans without a permission slip. But today I need to know. What did it make you feel, Buela? She squeezes her napkin in her hand and doesn't look at me as she moves her fork around the plate with the other. It brought back a memory of being a little girl and staring out at the ocean and wanting so badly to jump right in and swim far, far away. And being scared that if the water ever went above my neck, it would swallow me whole and never spit me back out. I nod and take a bite of my own food. No memories spring up. No new feelings. The only thing that happens is my taste buds respond to the tangy and salty notes. Even that memory of longing for what I was afraid of warms me up. Like a candle being lit from the inside. You were given magic, Nina. I let go of a breath I didn't know I'd been holding. I don't know much about pathogens and storing sugar, but damn if I don't know how to cook good food that makes people hungry for more, that makes people remember food is meant to feed more than an empty belly. It's also meant to nourish your heart, and that's one thing you won't ever learn from no textbook. Pudding with a pop. What they don't tell you about a culinary arts class is that it's a lot of work. More than when you cook in your own kitchen. We meet 3 times a week, on Monday, Wednesday, and Friday. And now that the introductory classes are done, each class is supposed to be broken down into a different category. Demonstration day, when Chef Aiden teaches us a new skill and we practice it. Recipe day, where Chef Aiden leads us through a new recipe. Grading day, where we have to follow the recipe on our own and get graded. Technical quizzes happen at the top of every class as we prepare for the serve-safe test, but we've yet to make a recipe on our own. And so, for the last 2 weeks, second to last period every other day, I walk into the kitchen, button up my white jacket, put my hair up in a pineapple, and tie on my headscarf, ready to get to my burners. But honestly, we spend more time cleaning than we ever spend cooking. We are always washing our knives, wiping down our cutting boards, clearing our stations, sanitizing our areas, putting things away from drying racks. It's exhausting work, and I know, like me, some of the other seniors were hoping for an elective that was going to be a little less intense. We've already had 2 people drop the class. Both Sharif and a girl named Elena decided they'd rather have a study hall. So now our class is only a tiny group of 10. Although I dread the quizzes, which are in everything from serving food to preparing it, I like the bits and pieces we learn about running not only a kitchen, but a restaurant. I would hate to make someone sick with my food, and that's what I try to remember when I'm studying for quizzes. But I just want to get to the part I'm good at, chefing it up. And today, for the first time, we are given a real recipe. Making chocolate pudding from scratch. We stir cocoa and cornstarch and sugar together, then stir in milk. Chef guides us step by step, and we all clean our stations as the pudding chills. As I'm putting away my ingredients, a little red bottle in the pantry calls my attention. I snatch it up and sprinkle some on my pudding. When Chef Aiden calls us up to test our dishes, I'm the first student to set my bowl in front of him. He grabs a clean plastic spoon and pulls my dish closer to him, leaning down to inspect it, turning the dish slowly in a circle. Nice chocolate color, smooth texture. You made sure the cream didn't break, which is great. And I'm curious what this is on top. He takes a tiny spoonful and pops it into his mouth. And the moment his mouth closes around the spoon, his eyelids close too. I wonder if my cooking woo-woo will work on him. What is that? He asks, his eyes still closed. I assume he means the spice on top, and not whatever memory may have been loosened by my pudding. His eyes open, and I realize the question was in fact for me. I used a little smoked paprika, I say. Heat creeps up my neck. I hadn't even thought about what would happen if I used an ingredient that wasn't in the original recipe. You trying to show off, Imani? Chef Aiden asks me, very, very seriously. No, Chef, I wasn't. The ancient Aztecs too would pair chocolate with chipotle and cayenne and other spices, although it is not so common now. Why do you add it? I don't know. I saw it in the pantry and felt the flavors would work well together. He takes another spoonful. Chef told us from the beginning that since every student is evaluated, he would very rarely take more than 1 bite of any single dish. I'm surprised he does so now, but he closes his eyes again, as if the darkness behind his lids will help him better taste the flavors. His eyes pop open. This isn't bad. He drops his spoon. Imani, I think creativity is good. And this... This, he gives a half laugh, like he's surprised he doesn't know what to say. He clears his throat, and it seems almost like a memory has him choked up. This is delicious. But I want to make sure you follow the ingredients list. If you work under a chef and they give you clear directions, it's disrespectful to try and modify their recipe without first consulting them, whether or not you think the flavors will work. He takes another spoonful of my dish. Class, everyone grab a spoon. Come eat Imani's chocolate pudding. A couple of the boys begin snickering, and I know they took his comment the dirty way. I don't drop my head, but I'm blushing, and it's from a mix of both pride and embarrassment. When we leave culinary arts, Malachi runs after me. Yo, Santi, you should have seen your face, Malachi laughs. Although class ended several minutes ago, I'm still flushed. I can't believe he said that, like he didn't know y'all got nasty minds. Malachi laughs again. I don't think Chef sees humans when he looks at us. Only white jackets and chefs in training. He lowers his voice. And to be fair, it was really very good pudding. I swat him on the arm. Stop that. Oh my God, I can't go back there. He laughs again. You'll be fine. You have a nice laugh, I say, and I must look as surprised as he does that the words left my mouth. We're still not friends. I don't know why I said that. Thank you. You have a nice laugh too, even though I rarely hear it. Don't say thank you and don't pay it back. That wasn't a compliment, it was an observation. Malachi shrugs and calls over his shoulder, I won't, Santi, and I haven't laughed that much in a while, so thanks for that too. Living large and lavish. On the bus ride home from school, Angelica is listing all the schools with graphic design programs she wants to apply to. NYU, Pratt, Savannah College of Art and Design. I listen quietly as she lists all the pros and cons of each program and the different professors she wants to work with at each school. I just don't know if I'll get in. All of these programs are amazing. They only accept the best of the best. I shake my head. Jelly, are you crazy? You are an incredible artist. Why do you think the school always asks you to draw the sports posters and decorate for the school dances? Why do all the kids in our class ask you for help whenever they need something designed? You see the world like no one else. Those schools should kiss your feet for even applying. And I'm not just blowing smoke up Angelica's ass. I mean, tush. Whether it's designing an outfit, drawing a logo, or putting together a flyer, if you give that girl a colored pencil, she'll give you back something that belongs in an art gallery. I guess. The guidance counselor thinks I have a good shot, and my mentor at the museum says my portfolio is the shit. But I'm nervous. What about you? What schools has Fuentes thrown your way? I stare out the bus window. Fuentes knows any school I apply to will have to be in Philadelphia. She's had me research LaSalle, Temple, St. Joseph's. She's pushing for Drexel, which has a culinary arts program. But you know I'm not good at school, so a scholarship is out the question. I don't even want to think about taking out loans. And how can I work full-time and go to school full-time and raise baby girl full-time? I think in order of most important, school is at the bottom, right? I tap my fingers against the window pane and fight the urge to bite on my nails. Angelica is quiet for a long moment, and I'm thankful she doesn't rush to reassure me with unrealistic words. But what if you get financial aid? You can't just work at the Burger Joint full time. It's not a bad job. It pays me, and I can maybe make manager one day. But how can I give Angelica an answer when I don't know myself? I stop staring out the window and force a smile. Right now, I'm going to keep working on your anniversary menu. How do you feel about lobster? Super romantic. She shakes her head. Okay, girl. I'll drop the topic, but just know, I think you have more to offer the world than you give yourself credit for. I look at Angelica and smile. Same, sis. Borrow that same advice. If one of those schools will make you a stronger artist, fill out that application and shoot your shot. For you, the stars and beyond. Impossibilities. It's Wednesday, and we are working on a new recipe, I'm glad a week has passed and people have stopped asking to taste my pudding. I tuck the ends of my scarf in. Putting on my jacket and head wrap always makes me feel like I'm a ball player in my full uniform stepping onto the court. Today, you're working with saffron. This isn't a regular spice. It stains and it's costly. A friend brought it back to me from Europe, so be precise with your knife work. Find a classmate. There's not enough to go around to do this individually. Chef Aiden claps his hands together. I look around the room as people pair up. At Malachi's station, Pretty Leslie squeezes his arm and smiles up at him. He catches my gaze, gives me a player's shrug like, I don't know why the pretty girl keeps touching me, and looks back at Leslie. Chef Aiden notices I'm still alone. Imani, it seems we have an odd number in class today. Will you work by yourself, or do you want to join another team and make a threesome? I shake my head. Chef Aiden keeps putting me in the most awkward situations with his comments. I can't even be mad at the Snickers. I'm fine working on my own. Chef Aiden wasn't wrong. It does take almost the entire period, and we have only 10 minutes left to plate our rice dishes and taste test. Good job, class. The chorizo on your cutting board wasn't the highest quality, but when it is, this paella is really something special and a staple in most Andalusian homes. He clears his throat. I have an announcement to make. We all look up. Dang, is he quitting already? It's only been 3 weeks. Chef Aiden is still talking. As you all know from the course description, we are set to travel to Sevilla, Spain for spring break in late March. My heart begins beating fast. For years, I've watched reruns of Anthony Bourdain shows where he tries food from all over the world. I've listened to chefs on Chopped talk about training in Paris and London. I've imagined myself traveling to far-flung places that have ingredients I didn't know existed. I didn't want to bring it up until we had the budget confirmed. The administration has returned with the initial numbers, and I now have a sense of what each student needs to raise. Each of you is accountable for $800 by December 15th in order to attend the trip. We will, of course, plan fundraisers to help reduce that cost. An ache shoots from my heart. $800 in what? A little over 2.5 months? I won't work enough hours to make even half of that by the deadline. Sure, some kids will be able to afford that without a fundraiser. Amanda, whose parents own a small accounting firm in Port Richmond. Talib, who stays over in Chestnut Hill with his lawyer father. I know for sure I, and probably Pretty Leslie, who's from the same hood, can't just come up with $800, money that would be better going toward the light bill and groceries or new shoes for baby girl. A week in Spain would change my life. It'd be huge. It'd be amazing. It'd be impossible. My stomach feels twisted in knots. I want to go so bad, but I grab that hope between my fingers and crush it like the strands of saffron, praying it doesn't leave a smudge. Santi. I'm one of the slowest students to clean my station. And when I leave the classroom, Malachi's leaning against the wall talking to Pretty Leslie. She giggles at something he says, but as if he feels me watching, his eyes swing my way. I raise an eyebrow and scoop past them. Hey, Santi, Malachi says. I don't want to be rude, but I also don't want to talk to Pretty Leslie, so I shake my head and keep going. Santi, I want to ask you something. I stop in the middle of the hallway and wait for him to catch up. He takes his sweet time walking over, Pretty Leslie on his heels. What's up? I say. I give Pretty Leslie a head nod and she looks between Malachi and me, her perfectly penciled in eyebrows furrowing. I'm good, Imani. How are you? She pops her gum, then lowers her voice in a fake whisper. How's your daughter? I force myself to keep smiling. I'm not ashamed of my baby. I'm not ashamed I had a baby. I'm not ashamed I'm a mother. I lift my chin higher. Baby girl's real good. She just started daycare a little over a month ago. Thanks for asking. I look Malachi straight in the eyes. His dimples are gone. That's wonderful. Leslie says. I don't know how you do it, girl. I couldn't imagine being a parent in high school. Right, Malachi? But Malachi isn't listening to Leslie. His eyes are on me. If there was one thing I learned once my belly started showing, it's that you can't control how people look at you, but you can control how far back you pull your shoulders and how high you lift your chin. Boys think of only two things when they find out you had a baby. Thing one, that you're too much baby mama drama, or thing two, that you're easy. Malachi pushes off the wall, but I keep myself as still as a dancer, waiting for her cue before she spins. You called out my name because you wanted to ask me something? Santi, do you like ice cream? I glance at pretty Leslie. She looks as surprised as I feel. Ice cream? I have a craving for ice cream. If you're not busy after school, you want to get ice cream? He's the most serious I've ever seen him. I look between him and pretty Leslie. The fake sweet smile she was wearing has cannonballed clear off her face into a pool of confusion. Is Malachi asking me on a date? In front of pretty Leslie? I mean, I know we're not friends or whatever. He smiles. The playful gleam is back in his eyes. But I was hoping we could talk. I let go of the breath I didn't know I'd been holding. I'll meet you at the main entrance after the bell. And even though Buela raised me right, she didn't raise me to be nobody's punk, so I don't bother saying ish to Leslie. And damn if I don't have a little swag in my step as I walk to English. Three's Company. Hold up, wait. Run that back for me. That bitch pretty Leslie tried to basically out you to this guy, and then he played the shit out of her and asked you on a date? In front of her? I need to meet this dude ASAP. I laugh at Angelica and grab my sweater from my locker. The weather is definitely cooling down, finally, and the last thing I need is a cold. She didn't try to out me. I'm not a closet mom. And your language, Jelly? Angelica slams the locker shut. Don't try to censor my language, Imani, just because you slipped in front of baby girl. But seriously, he didn't know, right? So it was your story to tell, not hers. I don't even know if she did it on purpose. Maybe she was trying to be nice. Jelly hooks her arm through mine. Imani, not even you are that naive. Didn't I raise you better? She was trying to piss on him. Jelly, what are you saying? Make a right. We turn. You know exactly what I'm saying. He was a fire hydrant, and she was marking her territory. But instead, the fire hydrant picked up legs and walked up under your tree. Jelly and her vivid imagination. I don't think that extended metaphor is working for you. Angelica screws her forehead up thoughtfully. No, I think it would make an interesting painting. Where are we going again? Why'd we turn this way? But we are already at the main entrance, and there's Malachi, standing with a group of other guys, all of them laughing. How does he make friends so fast? Angelica takes one look at him, and her eyebrows lift into her bangs. Isn't that the cutie I saw walking you to class? Is that Malachi? Is that why we came this way? Get it, girl? I pinch the inside of her arm to hush up any more questions. Malachi notices us and daps up the other dudes before breaking through the circle to approach me. You actually came. There is hope in the world, he says, smiling. Then he turns to Jelly, just like that, not even waiting for an introduction. I'm Malachi. I transferred from Newark. Angelica's eyebrows are still raised high on her forehead when she looks at him. Hello, Malachi. I'm Angelica. What's your business with my friend? It's funny you should ask. Why don't you come with us for ice cream and we can discuss? Is there somewhere near here we can go? Angelica and I look at each other. There's no ice cream spot nearby, and neither one of us would want to hang out so close to school anyway. There's only one place to go. You ever hung out by the Schuylkill? I ask. We cross the street to the train station on Broad Street. The walk is a silent one, and I begin getting nervous about Malachi and Angelica having an awkward conversation. If he says something wrong, Angelica won't hesitate to tell him about himself. But as soon as we get on the train, Malachi asks Angelica a million questions about me, and that trader starts telling him all my embarrassing middle school stories. I'm glad the train is so packed, people can't overhear their conversation or see my blushing cheeks. Angelica asks him about his intentions again, but it's clear she's mellowed out some, and Malachi's small shrug and sweet smile seems to be answer enough for her. We transfer to a second train, and it takes us another 12 minutes to get to the right stop, then a 5-minute walk toward the boardwalk to find the water ice shop Angelica and I love. "This isn't ice cream," Malachi says when we step into the shop. "No, it isn't. It's better," Angelica answers. We both look at him, daring him to argue that water ice isn't a direct gift from the gods. Malachi is clearly an intelligent guy because he knows better than to say a word. He just orders his lemon-flavored ice and we walk to the water. It's a beautiful day, and the way the light hits the water makes me so grateful to be where I'm from. I look at the bridge, the city skyline, people in canoes on the water, kids splashing in and out of a sprinkler nearby. Angelica spoons some cherry ice into her mouth and breaks the silence. "How are you two liking the culinary arts class?" Malachi carefully eats some of his water ice. "I like it. Has Imani told you about the time we all licked her pudding?" Angelica shoves her red bangs out of her eyes. "Hold up. What?" I swat Malachi on the arm. "It just sounds dirty." "Ouch. You're heavy-handed. I'll add that to the list of things I've learned about you today." We all get quiet. Then Angelica smiles brightly. "Well, I'm going to meet up with Laura. Her school is right around here and it should have just let out. Imani, give my goddaughter a hug for me. Malachi, make sure you get her home safe." She points at him as she gets up. "And don't make me hunt you down." He holds his hands up in surrender. "Yes, ma'am. I would treat her like the friends we aren't." He smiles wide, and I see Angelica falter. Angelica, who doesn't even blink twice over Idris Elba, almost trips on herself at the sight of Malachi's smile. I see the artist in her spark to attention. "What a beautiful smile," she says softly, like she's talking more to herself than him. "This one, the real smile you have on right now, almost as if you're choosing to give a sunlit middle finger to this fucked up world." She reaches out a finger and taps one of his dimples softly. "Be careful with that smile." She raises an eyebrow and looks my way. Clearly, the warning is for me. Jelly twinkles her fingers goodbye as she leaves. When I turn to look at Malachi, the smile is gone. The silence grows heavy. I throw my empty cup into a nearby trash can and wipe the sticky juice off my fingers with an extra napkin. "She didn't mean anything by that, and she doesn't like guys, so don't take the dimple touching too seriously." "You sure? I think I felt some serious vibes coming my way." But I can tell he's joking. "Why do you do it? Ignore pretty Leslie that way? Ask me to get ice cream?" He's eating his water ice really slowly and still has half of it left in his cup. "I know what it's like to have secrets. Or rather, private things. Family shouldn't be tossed around that way to try and bag some dude. Plus, I wanted to get to know you better. I know we aren't friends, but maybe we can become friends." I pretend to flick him in the face and he spills some of his water ice trying to back away. He points at me. "Cheap shot, Santi. Cheap shot." He wipes off his jacket with the napkin I hand him.